You're the big, big boss. You tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job. But I don't like your attitude.
Hey there, listeners. Paul here. It's time again for your weekly installment of the Leadership in Tech podcast series with our 10th episode, Crushing Expectations. This week, Errol is phoning in again, but is still covering great subjects with Zach. This episode is about expectations and the best ways to manage them. Listen in as they take you through another round of leadership quality control. I'd like to take this time to remind everyone that we upload an episode every Tuesday, and you can find our old episodes, show notes, and more at www.techonramp.com. We can be found on both Facebook and Twitter, and both are at TechOnRamp. Thank you and enjoy the show.
Now tell me, who do you think you are? Besides a person who happens to be in charge.
What are we talking about today?
Expectations, and specifically crushing expectations.
Aha.
A topic near and dear to my heart.
Why is it near and dear to your heart?
I know. I think it's fascinating. The expectations that you put on yourself, on your team, on your company, on your family, on whatever, really affects you day to day.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we're going to reference another article, right? Josh Pigford, founder at Barometrics, getting out of the startup rat race. This article resonated with both of us for a lot of those reasons.
I feel that guy.
So why don't you talk about from his perspective, you know, from the tech world, what you get about it?
Well, I'll talk about my perspective. So when I founded my company, Salt, 3 years ago, I left my job, my full-time job, and ventured out on my own. I, at the time, felt like a lot of tech founders do, that my goal should be to start a billion-dollar tech company. That's what we're right. supposed to do. That's what everyone's supposed to do, right? Be an entrepreneur and, start the next Uber. And so I think, like the author, I sort of took those expectations from the internet, right? You go on the internet and you read, and it says, if you're an entrepreneur, you're supposed to start a billion-dollar tech company. And I would be like, man, I'm an entrepreneur. I feel like I should start a billion-dollar tech company. That's right. What I'll do. And it took me a couple years to realize that that's not actually what I wanted to do, and that I wanted to be a freelancer, and I wanted to work on a lot of interesting projects. And, in the beginning, to read on the internet, a freelancer is a bit of a dirty word, right? Why do you want to be a freelancer when you could be a entrepreneur and have a billion-dollar tech company? And so it took me a little while to embrace sort of what I wanted to do and realize that my goals maybe weren't aligned with what the internet was telling me my goals should be. And I think that's really the subject of that article. He lays it out much clearer than I could. He did a really nice job.
Well, he talks about the quote unquote Silicon Valley success, and I've got a lot of thoughts on that. We've talked about leadership in tech and tech folks in general, and how there's an independence, right? And why should I have to be locked into being in an office? Because all those things of independence, which I completely resonate with and agree with, and I love that mindset. Yet, when it comes to success, the Silicon Valley model, everybody seems to be locked into that. So it's really this dichotomy, these competing forces. I want to be completely independent because that's what our industry demands. Yet, I'm going to lock myself into this model that somebody just decided to create. And now, if I'm not successful in tech startup or being an entrepreneur, if I don't do $1 billion.
Right. Otherwise, you suck.
And yeah, I mean, it's pretty hypocritical. It's pretty funny. So we talked a lot. We talked initially, maybe even episode one, on the moral condition. And we went into that a little bit and how ultimately you know, it means balance in life. Well, in his article, Josh talks about it. He had to, you know, he wanted those huge crushing expectations. And he was at it 24/7, right? Because that's what he thought he was supposed to do, because that's what the apparently
founders Silicon... are supposed to work hard. You're supposed to grind all the time.
Yeah. Well, no, all the time, 24/7, nothing else. And unbelievably, he decided to take 10 days to clear his mind and not think about it and just kind of let everything settle. And that's where he got his perspective. So what's the point? The point is, and he even brings it up, you cannot do it for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. At a minimum, you'll get burned out. At a minimum, it doesn't make you interesting. It makes you boring. But more importantly, you can't have your mind focus on one thing for that long without it needing a rest. You know, your brain is a muscle. It's always working, but it needs to step away from something for a while. And if you don't have that balance, you know, if you don't achieve the moral condition of understanding that there are a lot of important things out there, you probably will fail from burnout alone. So I thought it was great that he brought that up and was courageous enough to put it on paper, right? To say, no, you don't need to be 24/7 to be successful. And that's true. Doesn't mean you don't need to grind. Doesn't mean you don't need to work hard. Doesn't mean you don't need to sacrifice. You do. But you also have a life. You have a mother. Call your mother. You know,
but how do you know? So what I find so interesting is, how do you know if you're working under crushing expectations or valid expectations? I know, you know, a very popular way of thinking about projects or goals in the technology industry is, I forget who said it. I think we have the quote, shoot for the moon. Hold on, let me find this actual quote. You should probably just read the quote. Do you have it?
I do. Norman Vincent Peale. Shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars.
Yes, that's what everybody does.
And it's great. That's good. Big goals. Awesome. I set huge goals. But, you know, goal setting is a whole nother strategy in and of itself. So really what we're talking about here is not really properly setting goals. Not that we're not setting goals. We're not properly setting them. Well, what do I mean? Okay, well, you have a goal. I want a $1 billion company. Great. Good goal.
Because the internet told me I want one.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. Let's just say the internet didn't tell you. That's just something you decided you wanted. That's a massive goal. I'm all for it. Let's go for it. Why? Why do you want that? Okay. Well, just because that's what I think success is. Okay. Now we're getting somewhere. So if it's just to live up to other people's expectations on, you know, what everybody's supposed to be, how committed are you going to be to get that goal? Where's the pain in not, you know, achieving that? You know, Tony Robbins talks about goals, and he talks about the pain and pleasure associated with goals. And, you know, so again, what's your reason behind that goal? Because once you identify the reason, the steps will come to accomplish that goal. So for me, right, Errol Dobler, starting Leader 193, you know, I left the FBI, and, you know, people at the FBI, oh my God, you were close to your pension and blah, blah, blah. Well, the pain of me not starting my own company for various reasons, and somewhere down the line, we'll talk about, you know, my decisions for leaving those things, but the pain associated with not leaving and not starting my own company were far greater than any other pleasure. So I, you know, that's, for me, it was like, no, if I stay put where I am, what I'm doing, there's going to be a lot of pain, and that's unacceptable to me. So that is why I'm starting Leader 193. That's a goal. And okay, so what happens if it fails? What's the pain associated with me failing this company? The pain associated is I have to go back to work, not working on my own anymore, not being able to do things my own way, and on it goes down to family things, and those consequences for not succeeding are unacceptable to me. Okay, literally unacceptable. So therefore, my goal is to start this company, make it amazing, and be so financially secure that, you know, eventually my wife comes to work for me and we work together and so on and so forth. That's it. That's my why. And that's it's a compelling and strong why. Now I can put my plan together. Okay, so let's go back to this billion-dollar company. Great, great goal. I'm all for it. I have a massive goal. Why do you want a billion-dollar company? What is the pain associated with not getting it? Well, there's not. But if I have a billion-dollar goal and I only make $500 million, that's great. Okay, great. So it's really your goal's not a billion. It's just to make a lot of money because there's no pain associated with you not getting a billion-dollar company. So you know what I'm saying? So setting a goal and understanding why you're setting that goal are two different things. And then once you know the why, you can put that process into place.
No, that makes sense. So why do I want to have a billion-dollar company? Because I want to be famous and people to adore me.
Okay. And that for you, that may be a most compelling reason. You know, for you, it wouldn't be something that drives me, but that may be for you, right? That might be all you care about in life. Well, that's going to be a good enough reason.
Like the adoration of throngs of fans.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not why I would make the goal, and it may not be why you would make the goal, but it might be why somebody makes that goal. And if that's the reason, if the pain associated with not, you know, having millions of people love you and adore you and think you're the greatest thing since a slice of bread, if not having that is so unacceptable to you, then you will probably now put a good plan in place to get there.
You know, because the brain is not that. I mean, maybe it's just that you're taking the advice literally. If I shoot for the moon and fail, I'll still be a success. So it's almost like, is it the right thing to do to shoot for that $50 million company? Because then when I fail, I'll be a $5 million company. Or should I shoot for the billion-dollar company? And then when I fail, I'm the $500 million company.
Yeah, you know, and again, it's, you know, we're walking a fine line. You know, you still need to have a compelling reason. At some point, let's look at it this way. Let's break it down to something more simple. Somebody wants to lose 30 pounds, okay? And they're like, okay, well, I'm going to go for 30 pounds. No, you know what? I'm going to go for 50 pounds. That's just an awesome goal. So let's do it. And I'm going to reach this goal after 1 year. And after a year, you lose 25 pounds. And you're like, well, it wasn't 50, but it was 25, and that's good enough. Well, great. Your goal was never 50. It was 25.
And that's the essence of crushing expectations, because if you set – it's easy to say I'll shoot for 50 and then I'll lose 25 and be happy. But if for that entire year that you were shooting for 50, you had that expectation of 50 and you're like beating yourself up over 50, that's a tough way to live.
It is a tough way to live. But then what I would tell you is that, again, let's just say it was, okay, then I lost 25 and I'm happy. Your goal was 25. Your goal wasn't 50. Okay. And if you have that why 50? Well, because I've decided that 50 pounds is the place where let's just say I'm projecting that and I want to keep my word, and keeping my word is so important to me. The idea of telling somebody I was going to do that and then not doing it is crushing to me. You've just found your why. Everybody's why is different. Okay. And now you will set in motion the plan to lose that 50 pounds, where 50 is the number. Okay, you will, because your brain is an amazing tool. Once you have decided, and once you are visualizing, once you are planning towards something that is a compelling why, your brain will start to bring you there. It just will. You will find a way, believe me. But again, if it was, well, 50 is a good goal, but if I get close, that's good. Great. Your goal is to get close. Your goal is to get half.
Well, and you can see the lack of a why in even the way I was just talking about startups, right? I mean, it's a little silly to say, do I want to have a $500 million startup or a $50 million startup, versus mm-hmm. to say, I want a tech on-ramp. I want to help kids learn how to code. I want to create value in their lives. So right. I want to use data to create value for businesses. These are more whys. It has nothing to do with money, right?
Right. You know, and, you know, that's, again, that's the other thing. And your whys, That's why sitting down, goal setting is a process just like anything else. and to understand why and what's the effect of what will happen if you don't make it. If your answer is, well, I won't really care that much or I'll be disappointed, that's allowed. But then you've got to reevaluate your goals. Okay. And that's okay too. You know, look, the key to goal setting is flexibility. You know, you set a goal for a year out or your billion-dollar company at this amount of time. So you say in 1 year, I'm going to have a billion-dollar company. Great. Good goal. And you have your reasons and it's compelling and your brain is going to take you there because now you have a plan. You still need to reassess every step of that process to get your goal daily, weekly, monthly. And you need to be flexible. Because if you are flexible and honest and you're following your plan, you might look at it and go, you know what? It's not possible. You know, and it's okay. My number is really closer to 500 million, and that's okay for whatever series of reasons. You were just flexible. You still have an amazing goal, but you were realistic. Okay.
I would separate, you know, flexibility and realistic, yes. Right? I mean, that's the whole problem with crushing expectations is they're unrealistic and you don't realize it, right?
They're not unrealistic. It's just because you don't have a compelling reason to do it and where the pain of not achieving it is something you won't tolerate in your life. Let me look at this. A couple things. So when I didn't get out of the Naval Academy, you pick your service selection. It's this huge night and all these things are on the board and you go in based on your class rank and you pick. Well, you know, I wanted to be a SEAL and there was only a handful of SEAL billets and there was a lot of guys, a lot of great guys who were ranked higher than me in the class who were going to pick, and those billets were all gone by the time it was for me to pick. So I had to go to a ship. My goal was to be a SEAL. And it gets exponentially harder once you join the surface Navy, once you become a ship driver, then to lateral over, transfer over to the SEAL community, because there's still as many people who want it and they only take maybe one person a year. But in my mind, that was my goal. And it was, and you know, I can't really go into the reasons why, but it was unacceptable to me to not be a SEAL. It was the pain associated with not becoming a SEAL at some point was not something I was willing to bear, and I just knew it was going to happen. So I set that plan in motion, okay, and I had a plan, and I reevaluated that plan. Where was I on that plan? What did I have to adjust to get there? Okay, it's a good example because it just, in my mind, it was going to happen. And people ask me all the time, you know, we talk about BUDS, you know, the SEAL training. Well, how did you do it? My answer is, how did I do it? I was never not going to do it. So I don't know how I did it. The goal was to be a SEAL. And in my mind, there was no alternative. So it just, I don't know how I did it other than that's it. That was my goal. So the pain associated of not achieving that was something that I couldn't bear. So is the pain associated with your billion-dollar company something you can't bear? Well, no, because if your answer is, if I get close, I'll be good. Great. Your goal is to be close to $1 billion.
Right.
It's all right. You know what I mean? So then we say these crushing expectations. Well, we're not thinking it through enough. You know what I mean? We're not thinking, is that really my goal? Because if it is, probably will get there, you know? And again, it's okay if you don't get there and you're close, but it's all individually based. And am I rambling? Is this making any sense?
No, it makes total sense. And I've sort of gone on that journey. It just took a couple years, right? Like the author, you labor under the crushing expectations until you really can step away and figure out why am I doing this, right? And I know now that my goal is to have a small team that works really well together and does really great work and does work that I consider valuable. And so it's 100% different than what I thought my goal was a couple years ago.
Right. And that goal for you, right? So that goal is your goal now. And you know, just from the industry, if you do that and you do that enough financially, you're going to get yours, right? And that for you, it sounds like is good. You know that that money's going to come. You don't have a set number of what you think that is. You just know if I do my goals, which is what you just described, I know, because I know the industry, the money will come and I'll be very financially happy.
Right. Which is that's not unlike the conclusion the author came to. It is sort of realizing that you would like to enjoy the journey a little bit, and that if you can put yourself in a place to create value, then everything is going to work out.
Yeah. So the goal setting in and of itself is an art. You know, some people don't make big enough goals. Let's go there, right? The billion-dollar company. You know, if you ask somebody just off the top there, you know, what's your goal in life? They may not really, it's, you know, to be happy. That's a good goal, right? And, you know, I just want to get married and maybe have a couple kids. Those are all good goals. But I'm not so sure. Are you reaching high enough? Like, those are great to have a good family. Let's look at it this way. When a child goes to see Santa Claus, right? Do those kids, do they have any inhibitions about what their goals are? I want a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. Nope. I want two swimming pools. I want one for me and one for, and I want a rocket ship. Okay. Those are goals, man. I want that. And I want that really bad. You know, I think as adults, we should be more like that. But at the same time, right? The billion-dollar company, that's awesome. That's two swimming pools. But why? You got to know why, and you have to be realistic. You have to evaluate those goals, because you might come up in the middle of it and say, you know what? $1 billion isn't quite as important to me as I thought, but 500 million is. And here's why. Because in my mind, for some reason, $500 million company means the epitome of success. And if I do it in this amount of time, I will get the respect from my peers. And I want people to know my name. Great. Not my reasons, but it's that person's reasons. And that's good enough, as long as they know why. So you put these crushing expectations on yourself for these massive goals, you're just not really,
You're not feeling enough pain to make it worth it.
Well, yeah. And you're not being honest with what you're doing. Because if you have a goal that is so important to you, those expectations aren't going to be crushing. They're going to be motivating. You're going to wake up every morning like, I cannot wait to get after this, because I know at the end of this rainbow is my goal that I said I have to have for these reasons. The expectations are not going to be crushing. Not saying there's not going to be pressure. I'm not saying there's not going to be bad days. I'm not saying that. Those are two different things. But crushing unrealistic expectations are different from just pressure and stress. Because, you know, if you're going to have big goals, getting there is going to be hard. But generally speaking, like, you know, I wake up every morning and I know where I want my company to be, and I get excited. My day goes by too fast. If $1 billion in a year was my expectation, just because somewhere I thought that was a random number and that's what it's supposed to be because, you know, Marshall Goldsmith did that. Yeah, I'm going to, like you said, stare at a blank piece of paper and be like, I don't know how to do this. Well, because that's not really my goal. I haven't defined it thoroughly enough.
And so do you find that if you get off track, you know, every quarter or 6 months, that you want to sit back and reevaluate the why? Or, I mean, it sounds like maybe for you personally, you are good at setting long-term goals. But someone like me, who in the beginning didn't have the why, sort of when I feel things getting a little sideways, it's the first thing you should almost do is like sit down and like tell myself the why again.
Yeah, at 100%. 100%, because that's the only thing that's going to keep you motivated, keep you going, keep you balanced. You had a why when you left your company and started Salt. You had a why because you did it. And not a lot of people do that, you know. Relatively speaking, the percentage of people that make that commitment to leave a relatively safe job and start out on their own, that's massive. So you had a why and you did it, and your Salt is successful. It will be here for as long as you want it to be. So somewhere in there, you had your why. Maybe you didn't fully identify it, but you knew what it was. And maybe it was, I will never go back to work for another big company that's not on my terms again. And the only way to make that on my terms is to create my own company. That was your why. And then the finances followed, because that's just a natural, you know, application of your why. So you did have it. But checking those goals regularly, literally daily on some goals and weekly and monthly, and then reevaluating. You know, you'll find it. You'll keep it in check, and you'll keep that motivation. You'll keep that excitement. Crushing expectations, yeah. We've talked about this a lot. The pressure of having your own company, doing work for a week and literally not making a dime because, you know, that's not where we are yet. I don't have Errol Dobler's video series that a billion people, you know, where I'm making money in my sleep. So yeah, every now and then the weight of the world feels like it's on my shoulders, but that's okay. That comes with the territory. You know, those are different because my goal is achievable. And to me, it's unacceptable not to have it. So I'll have it because I know what my why is.
Boom.
I think that's it. I mean, did we cover it?
I think so. What did we miss?
You know, well, you know, there's, I guess we went from, you know, because I was ready to talk about, you get your why, and then you will find then your plan to get there, right? The how will come next.
Well, so we can talk about that for a few minutes because we're only at 25 and we could go 5 more minutes.
All right. So, you know, then what's the how? Okay. And this is what resonated with me in the article. He was like, we were just throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what stuck. And that would be the next big thing to get that hockey stick, you know, growth on the chart, you know. And that's not a plan. You know, just everybody, let's see if this works. Let's see if this works. That's not going to get you there. You know, it's just simply not. So
yeah, but how do you know what to do if you don't? How do you, like, I mean, if I want to, you know, whatever my goal is, if I don't quite know how to get there, I have to try a lot of different things.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, we're talking about reality here. So you have a goal that, and you've identified why you need to get there, what that pain versus pleasure will be. In your industry, you should know enough to be able to put together a plan that makes sense, right? Now, again, that you continue to reevaluate, and you may have several plans, right? But the idea of I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff up against the wall, now maybe he's just being flip with his language, but I would say, okay, what's our first plan to get to this goal? Let's all sit down and let's have something that makes sense. And if it doesn't work, great. We readjust, we reevaluate, we make a new plan. That's goal setting. That's how you do it. That's how you are evaluating where you are, where you're standing, how close you're getting. And so, yeah, now we have to try something new. That's fine. You'll find it. So how do we do that? Well, the last episode we talked about, you know, military stuff and pro words to keep communication short. There's another acronym in the military, SMAC. And you know, this is one of the things that I teach my clients because planning process is so, it's just not out there a lot. So what's the situation? What's your mission? What are your actions? What's your communication, your command and control? What are your contingencies? Okay, so I have my goal. My goal is $1 billion. What's the situation? I have to know the situation first. Okay, situation is I need to come up with a plan to get $1 billion. Okay, so what's my mission? My mission is to execute, you know, this plan. This is because this is what I originally thought. So the mission is to get whatever, I don't even know. In a tech world, what would a mission be?
To deliver on-demand water to impoverished countries.
There you go. That's the mission. Okay, so what are my actions to do that? Well, I know I have to do A, B, C, and D. Okay, and then, okay, great. Who do I need to communicate with to do that? You know, who do I need, you know, blah, blah, blah. Let's go back to the actions. What are the roles of the people involved in my team to achieve that mission? What are my contingencies? If A and B don't work, where do I go then? Does that mean that's the end of the mission? That means if those don't work, it can't work, or it means we could try a different route. Okay. All of those things. And that's we'll go through a whole nother episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, everything, if you want to do great things, okay. Throwing stuff against the wall and having something stick. Look, I'm sure it's worked, but that's crushing expectations. I don't know how you wake up every day with a huge goal and just start whipping things against the wall. I mean, that you're going to stay up all. Yeah. That's why you do 24/7. You know, that's why you can't stop thinking about it, because you don't have a plan. At least if you have a plan, you're saying, are we achieving these metrics? Are we meeting where we're going? And if we're not, now I have a new job. My job is to reevaluate.
I'm thinking so, we should do the plans are for people who expect to fail episode before the smack episode.
Okay. We could definitely do that. And the plans that are for people that, what is it again?
For people who expect to fail.
Planning is for people who expect to fail. Right. That was a Zach Ruiz-ism, right?
That you're bound to squash, I feel.
Yes, 100%. And I look forward to squashing that. And I bring this up to a lot of people because, you know, when I go through this process, sometimes I could see people get a little tight. Well, you know, it just seems very structured. And I'm kind of more of a freewheeling. I did something with salespeople. And that's, oh my gosh, salespeople. And I was a salesperson, so I could talk to it. You know, well, I just, you know, that's why I'm a salesperson, to have that flexibility. I'm freewheeling. I wing it. You know, like, okay, well, that's good. So you don't have a plan? Like, so that's your plan is to not have a plan. And so when you go, you just walk into a meeting not knowing what you expect and not having any contingencies if that sale doesn't happen or they're skeptical. So it took me a minute to say, do you think SEALs are inhibited? Do I come across as somebody who's just so unflexible and rigid? Like, no, of course not. Right. SEALs are among the most free-spirited, free-thinking people I've ever met in the world. But we do that with our goals. My goal is to be able to do this. Now I know I need a plan. I know I need a plan now, because you can't get to that amazing freewheeling goal without a plan. So yeah, we'll go ahead and I'll squash that happily.
Another episode is probably just along the lines of what you were saying with the sales team. Some tech teams do tend to reject the command and control structure that mm-hmm. sort of comes from the military. Yep. You know, there's a lot of companies that have embraced holocracy, I can't even say it, meritocracy, sort of other non-command and control mechanisms. And that might just be interesting to talk about that for an episode.
Yeah, it will, because I get it. You know, not everybody, the military is not for everybody. And there's a lot of things in the military that are amazing that anybody can adopt and have it be effective. And a lot of things not, you know, again, My point to those people would be, you're so close-minded that you can't look at an institution that really achieves success most of the time in what they do. And we're talking war fighting. Again, somebody said, well, how about Vietnam? Well, I don't think we lost one battle in Vietnam. That was a political disaster. Okay, so from the military standpoint, the war fighting aspect, boy, our military has a pretty good record, and there's a reason they had things in place. So you're saying, as a company, I can't take and emulate some of those aspects of what the military does and put it here. And it doesn't have to be a rank structure. We don't like the rank structure. Great. Don't have a rank structure, but have a plan. Okay. Because that makes sense.
I'm looking forward to some of these episodes. We'll get into it.
All right. Sounds good, man.
Boom.
Expectations are something that I've repeatedly beat myself up over. I've always obsessed over them and worried that I'd fail to meet them even when I exceeded them. We'd love to hear the listeners' experiences and views on expectations in the tech industry. Let us know your thoughts on it or just on how we're doing by reviewing us on iTunes. The Leadership in Tech podcast series is a part of a larger project called the Technology On-Ramp, a 10-week educational program that prepares candidates to be able to get jobs in the technology sector. You can find out more about us and how we're revolutionizing leadership in tech and the industry in general by going to techonramp.com. At the bottom of the homepage, you can sign up with your email address to receive episode announcements, as well as leadership tips and professional development resources in our email newsletter. To find out about the players involved in the Tech On-Ramp, check out Errol Dobler at www.leader193.com, Zach Ruiz at www.salt.io, or me, Paul Maslany, as well as them at LinkedIn, or you can even find all three of us on the podcast database poddb.me. As always, the Leadership in Tech podcast is on Stitcher.com, PocketCast.com, SoundCloud.com, Player.fm, iTunes, and Google Play Music. Thank you, and see you next week.
Tell me what to do, and I'd gladly do my job, but I don't like your attitude. I don't like your attitude.